Lately, I have been focused on interviews, especially for my YouTube channel, a lot more than the Music and Stuff Right to Know One podcast. But I did make a promise to some of the people who I have interviewed with to release it on the Spotify podcast whenever possible. So here it is. This is just one out of many, and I hope you like what you have to hear. Stay tuned.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you're more than welcome. It's so nice to have you with us today. I'm actually setting up myself, just starting the recording right now.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. Oh, I can see you right now. So, I'm just getting my questions set up and everything else. This is just preliminary. This, believe it or not, this is the second time I've actually done an interview of a famous person.
Oh, I'm famous to my mum and my dad, but...
I interviewed a filmmaker, his name was Rob Lambert. He'd done a film that was quite similar, that people said was like to Joker. I interviewed a guy who was from Breaking Bad. His name was Raymond Cruz. He played Tuco, and he was like the menacing drug dealer. So that was pretty cool.
Right, excellent.
Yes. So I've got a bit of repertoire to my name, and I also will be getting Funky Porcini, James Braddell, to answer a few of my questions as well for like next week.
Oh yeah, you mentioned because we did a remix of Funky Porcini years ago. It must be maybe 18 and 19 years ago now. I don't know.
Oh, blimey. That's pretty cool there. The trip-hop connection, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah.
There you go there. So,
I scanned through your questions. So I was going to say, obviously you're recording. I did scan through your questions quickly, but it's been absolutely crazy this week because we were launching another Ben EP, you know, as you already know, and all the rest of it. It's just been mad. And I've been doing all the video work and this, that, and the other, and it's just been mad. So, yeah. It's just been one of those, really.
Oh, no, I totally understand. You know, work and creativity comes first and everything else sort of second. But I'm very proud of what you're doing. Everything from Program to Love to Up in the Air and some of the exercise part 4 videos that you've been publishing on the Instagram. So, great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, yes. It was quite nerve-wracking coming back as Ben, you know, because we both had such a long gap from actually working together. We didn't actually know what we were going to be like in the same room together, but it was actually just, without saying actually every 5 seconds, it was just like we'd not been apart, really, you know. It was, just back into the usual role of messing around, acting like idiots, and somehow getting music out at the same time.
Well, you know, sometimes some groups, they get back together, but it doesn't always work out. Like Lush, for instance, they had that one EP and then they disappeared. But I'm glad, hopefully, the Bent name will be sticking together for as long as it can be, because I know if I should get on my questions right here, but I will say, when I first saw some of your music videos on MTV Dance and when I was at Virgin Megastore, many years ago when I was in my teens, you know, it brings me back to a much simpler time when music was actually good and MTV used to play music videos.
Yeah, that's when the M because they don't realise what M stands for, do they, nowadays?
Exactly, yeah, it's all teenage mothers and shows about people from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't go out in a bit of a tangent here, but I will ask...
don't start me off, mate.
I will ask the first question, because you're right, old mate. Now, before anything, are you related to Mike Mills from REM, or is that a question you get asked of?
I've never been asked that before, but no, I'm not, sadly, because I really like REM. I'm not related to Jeff Mills either. I'm not related to any of the Millses. I'm out here by myself, yeah.
We just were saying that for some of our curious fans who might be, I would call Bent fans programmers or interceptors or exercisers. That's my, you know,
exercises,
like,
at the start of the year.
Insane Clown Posse, their fans are called Juggalos, but they're crap. Your ones are better. So, first question is, what was the main impetus for doing a reunion album of sorts for Bent? Was there a sense of nostalgia or a feeling during this pandemic that people need something lighthearted after so much darkness?
I think, well, to be honest, we never really split up. It's funny what it was, we just naturally kind of went down our own paths in around 2007. We did Intercept, and then the business was getting difficult, the industry was getting really tricky. We both, our lives were going kind of, you know, quite different as well. Neil wanted to move to London. I was still in Nottingham. And we both kind of wanted to do our own thing as well, you know, so we did that. And then I ended up moving to Ireland, which I've been here for like over 10 years now. And I've been happily being self-indulgent with my own thing. And so has Neil. But we've often said, oh, you know, maybe one day we should just get our heads together to do some more stuff. And then the years just rolled by. And then I think at the start of last year, because I did the location on album, sort of, because I'm kind of in a lockdown here all the time anyway, because I'm in the middle of the country, in the middle of nowhere. All of my friends are in England and I'm in Northern Ireland, you know. So a lot of the time I'm kind of in isolation. So it's funny to say, yeah, I mean, often I'd have people coming over to do stuff, you know, recording-wise and that. They come over and stay for a couple of weeks, whatever. But, yeah, it was just a case of, you know, I kind of did this that album and we were both realising that a lot of people seem to be listening to music again that was more maybe listening music rather than dance music, you know. And we just thought it was kind of like, well, let's get our heads together. But it was just before the lockdown we'd actually planned. We'd actually been writing stuff about 6 months before, sort of like the end of 2019, really. And the plan was actually to do a big full album and have lots of different vocalists on there. But then the lockdown happened. We couldn't get everything done. So we thought, right, let's get Up in the Air for it. Let's do Up in the Air as a mini album. And then we'll put all the rest of the stuff together to do the big album. So we're actually in the hard disk. There's actually a lot of stuff ready for what we're hoping is going to be a big, big Bent album, you know. But we're just waiting for the lockdown to go so we can start catching up with vocalists again and all that, you know. So looking forward to doing that again, yeah.
Well, I'll definitely keep my ear out on what will be there is to come. I know there'll be an exercise song on there, as usual. You always like to do test sound collages. But, yeah, I would be very interested if you even bring back regulars like Zoe or John Marsh from Beloved onto the song.
Yeah.
I'm actually a great fan of John Marsh because The Sun Rising and Sweet Harmony with the Nudity music video.
Yeah, both of us are massive Beloved fans. I mean, when we were with John, it was surreal, you know. And then we obviously, on that record, we worked with Stephen Haig, who, you know, he produced all the Pet Shop Boys stuff, and it was just surreal working with all these heroes, you know. But, yeah, we've been speaking to John quite a lot. Over the last few years, you know, he keeps popping up, and we've been speaking to Rachel quite a lot as well, Rachel Foster, from the Aerials album, so. But I'm also working a lot with Joel Hood, who's on my solo stuff, which I also do the Songs and Sanctified stuff with, because he's got very soft vocally, you know, and he's a great writer as well. So, yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of Joel in the new Bent incarnation.
Well, I'm certainly excited for it. Whatever comes your way, I'm sure it'll be much better than any sort of Dua Lipa or Chance the Rapper sort of stuff that they play on the radio. The Top 40 Billboard and UK Top 40. Don't listen to that stuff. I listen to whatever I like. Lately, I've been listening to not only you, but Add N to X. You remember that band?
Okay, yeah.
It was like Anne Shenton and Barry Seven. It's really sort. It sounded me a little like Broadcast by Warp.
I love Broadcast. I love Add N to X as well. I've actually got one of their. It's that hexagonal record that I've got. They were absolutely bonkers, and they were completely. I mean, we loved all that kind of stuff, especially because they loved all that analog stuff, you know. And we're just analog synth freaks, you know. So Add N to X were fantastic. Their record sleeves are always brilliant as well, you know.
Oh, definitely. Avant Garde is probably their best one. I know I shouldn't be promoting other people's work compared to yours, but you know. every form of album or single LP can influence another artist, and I also do music myself, and I've certainly had a lot of influences in my day. Yours included, and a few others, but I'll get to that a little later. The second question I wanted to ask was, something about Bent's music has a very atmospheric, jazzy sound. It's not quite trip-hop, but it's not quite chill-out ambient. Was it born out of a feeling of just being quirky or unique for the sake of it? Because when I listen to their music, it makes me want to drink a gin and tonic. Yeah. By the coastside, near Margate.
Well, anything makes me want to have a gin and tonic. It's weird because, I mean, I think we both Neil and I mean, we've got a massive love of lots of different types of music. And we weren't specifically into one genre of music. And we always used to say that we just liked getting everything and throwing it into one bag and seeing what happened, you know. So sometimes it might sound a little bit trip-hoppy, and other times it might be a bit daft. But we were very influenced at the time, you know, 20 years ago, it was like listening to Massive Attack, and you had like the core production team, and then they had these different vocalists that they worked with. So we definitely had an influence from that. But then we both loved a lot of hip-hop as well, like De La Soul, you know, they were so inspirational because they were sampling just ridiculously daft records like Shawaddy Waddy and Hall & Oates and things like that. Everybody else was sampling this cool soul and funk, and they were just sampling all this daft stuff. And, you know, I used to have I still have all these records here, none of them are serious, you know, they are serious, the James Last and the all sorts of stuff. I can pull anything at random and you'll probably make you laugh, but we get a lot of fun out of just sampling things that make us smile, you know. We almost have a rule, which is like, I'll go, oh no, I don't know if we can put that in, it's just ridiculous. And now, well, no, that it has to go in then, you know. If it sounds daft, then it has to go in. So sometimes there's bits of jazzy things in there, and there's Latin, and there's disco, and, you know, it's a whole hodgepodge, really. We also used to say when we did the first album, we wanted it to be like a, what we'd say in Nottingham is a bag of Tuffies, a bag of sweets, you know. It's like there's like a bonbon, and there's like a, you know, there's all these different flavours, all these different sweets in one bag. That's how we kind of imagined the first album to be. So, yeah.
But that's the best thing about your music, is that it has a variety of flavours and sub-genres to choose from. In the same way Gorillaz, a much more mainstream group, does sort of the same thing, but, you know, with a bigger budget and with animation. They sort of have trip hop one here, industrial, house, alternative.
They tap into so many different things that kind of resonate with people, and I think that's why they just work so well, Gorillaz, you know. There's just so many really lovely sort of references to older records, especially like they're really hip hoppy sort of things as well, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, they sometimes put De La Soul on some of their collaborations, and I think they put Snoop Dogg Dogg, the Shizzle Nizzle, in the song. I know, that was a bad impersonation, but yeah, when I heard Up in the Air, I definitely had a feeling that you were treading on more sort of ethereal grounds. I'm trying to think of a particular artist that comes into mind, but maybe like a weird mix between Jean-Jacques Berry and Blue States.
That is really weird you saying about Jean-Jacques Berry, because I don't know why, but I actually pulled that record out yesterday, because somebody else was asking me, well, you know, what are the 10 big influences, you know? Well, you know, I mean, there can't be 10, but no, there's loads of old daft influences like that. Yeah, definitely. you seem to pick up on a lot of it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so I noticed, you know, little influences here and there with music and sound, which even brings me to the next question as well regarding influence as concerned. Whether it be Up in the Air, Intercept, or Everlasting Blink, or Program to Love, what were the strongest for you? Like the Canterbury scene sound, like Robert Wyatt, jazz fusion, dream pop or shoegaze, like Cocteau Twins, My Bloody Valentine. I think I said jazz fusion, like Chick Corea, rest in peace, and ethereal new wave like Tangerine Dream and Talk Talk.
Well, I mean, the latter, definitely. I mean, I'm just such an 80s lover. I mean, Tangerine Dream did the theme tune to Street Hawk, you know, so I'm going to love that. But I mean, to be honest with you, we love It's difficult to pin it on one thing, because we actually used to listen to Weather Report. Now they're going to laugh at it, because it's just saying all over the place, it's mad. It's weird. We wouldn't be sort of... I mean, Neil's got such a vast range of music that he listens to. I'm just sort of stuck in the 80s and listen to lots of soundtracks. And just love Daft music as well. But Neil would, you know, his record collection just spans so much stuff and lots of jazz and this and that. It's crazy, really. So, yeah, I guess you kind of could say all of the above, really, because we loved a lot of ambient stuff as well. And obviously all the stuff that was on Warp Records back in the day. And, yeah, it's everything, really. You know, a lot of the ambient stuff. I love Global Communication. Massive fan of Global Communication.
7614, I've got that album at home. I started having to sell my records for a bit of cash, but yes, that was an influence of mine as well.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful album, yeah. I mean, I remember I used to listen to that a lot, and that was in the years leading up to Ben, you know. And then, yeah, it's funny, really, because, you know, it's a lot of that music as well. I remember them saying that you could make a lot of music with very little gear, you know. I remember Tom Middleton saying that you could have an Akai S3000, you could have a space echo or whatever, it was a Boss SE50 reverb or something. And that's all you need, really, to make that kind of music. And I can remember thinking that, wow, I don't actually need that much gear. And at the time, we had nothing, you know. It's even like the Aphex, when he started out, he was kind of an inspiration in a lot of ways. Because, I mean, you know, he's always had some amazing gear in that. But a lot of the production was so lo-fi that it kind of made you think, especially back in the early 90s when everybody was trying to make everything sound amazingly clean. You know, it's kind of an inspiration to everyone who had a four track. You know, so yeah.
I would agree with that too. I know, like you said, Aphex Twin, especially from his earlier years on Reflex. I don't know what happened to that label. I think they disbanded. That was very sort of weird. Because you implement and control his modules and little toys and gears. That was very effective, but I know he's on the more sort of dark and more disturbing end of electronica, especially if you've seen Come to Daddy and Window Licker. I remember when I first saw that. I was like, I probably shouldn't watch that when I did. I was like 11.
Yeah, Window Licker's just like the maddest. I remember that coming out and just thinking. And he's always been ahead of the curve. That's the thing about him. He's always just been just so far ahead of the curve to everybody else. It's kind of frightening, really. But yeah, I mean, for me, the first Selected Ambient 1 and 2 are still my favourites, really. You know, I just, every time I listen to them, I just think, God, you know, it's simple but beautiful and dusty and atmospheric and brilliant. Brilliant.
For me, it's I Care Because You Do, because like Programme for Love, brilliant. It was a mix of hodgepodge of subgenres that were included. Some that were extremely noisy, that gave me a little tinnitus, like Ventolin, and then softer stuff like, I think it was like the Waxen. It was an anagram for his name. It's got some strange titles.
I used to love Mike and Rich as well, the stuff they did with Mike Parodine, and that always made me laugh. In fact, when I first met Neil, I remember, because that was almost like how Ben started off, because we were messing around, we were living together, and we weren't planning to do anything serious together. We said, let's just sample anything we want, and we were like being as ridiculous as we could. So when we put the drum machine on, we weren't trying to make anything cool sounding, I was trying to make really daft, sped up bossa novas or something, you know. And we were just drinking loads of vodka and basically trying to make each other laugh. That's actually the core of it, is most of the time we're trying to make each other laugh. So we'll end up programming things. Like when they had Cubase, I can remember we used to think, how can we use this software in the way that it wasn't intended to be used, you know? But just sampling bagpipes and reversing them and then putting, you know, some opera on the top of it or something. Yeah.
Oh, I could definitely imagine how a song like Thick Ear or Willie Top Mary was probably produced. Like, hey, that's Abby!
Yeah, well, actually, they were very much so. They were kind of born out of when Acid, not the drug, the software, when that came about, where you could time.
Hello?
Straight like a mod. They made us listen to the bin, be like, right, now we can actually stretch any audio to anything else. And without having to put it into tiny bits, it was crazy, you know. That was just before we moved over to Ableton when we did those, yeah.
I'll definitely have to see about that sort of software, because usually when I make music, especially my early years under MXQ, which stands for Macrocosmic Expansion Queries, I mostly just used Magix and GarageBand. That was some of the earlier stuff I used. Now I'm using GarageBand again on my iPad, and it's doing just the job for me, because unfortunately, I know this will sound ridiculous, I'm not that wealthy. I can't afford all the toys for such electronic instruments. I could never afford a Moog or even a Korg growing up, but when I have the time and chance, I'll definitely get one so I could compete with the big boys.
Well, you know what, honestly, the truth of it is, I mean, it's like when we did Always, because a lot of people said, oh, what's the bass sound on that, you know, and it was a Yamaha home keyboard. It wasn't a Moog or anything, or a Moog, you know, it wasn't anything like that. It's quite funny, actually, because when we went to do that live, I actually went through all of our different synths. At one point, we had about 45 different synths. We had everything, you know, and I was trying to recreate the sound for the bass in Always, and I was thinking, this is ridiculous. I made it on a toy home keyboard for kids, and it's ended up being the sound that, you know, I can't get that sound on one of these posh synths. So I think it's not always about what you've got, you know. I think that when we have too much gear, I always think about this analogy where if you have a horse and you put it between two bales of hay, it will starve to death because it doesn't know where to eat from, you know. And we were a little bit like that with the synthesizers. We had so much gear. We had all this amazing stuff. And I used to sit there and kind of just look at it, you know, switch it on, look at the lights, switch some of the lights off, have a couple of beers and go, oh, well, you know, and not actually get any music done. So, yeah. But there you go, anyone rambling.
If I ever needed three instruments in my lifetime, except for the GarageBand software that I'm using, I would get a Gibson or Fender bass guitar. I love bass guitars. I think of myself as a mini square pusher. I would get a Nord or one of those Korg workstations, because I love the sort of modules and manipulations of sound that you can do on that, and it's also MIDI, so you can't go wrong. And maybe, for that matter, a drum sampler by Akai. They call it Akai, right?
You broke up there, actually. So what is that?
Oh, I was just saying about a drum sampler machine, like an Akai. Or a K?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
So I've got different pronunciations for certain things as well. But I'll get to the next question. I don't know if this might be a little... of a sensitive matter, but the name origins behind Bent, because someone had told me that means like LGBT, and I always was on the assumption like, Pet Shop Boys, right?
Well, you asked what happened then. From my point of view, I just saw you kind of froze, and then you went Pet Shop Boys. You were saying it was a touchy subject or something. What was it again? Sorry.
Is the word the name origin for Bent related to LGBT?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, when it started out, I mean, in England, especially in the 80s, it was a word that was thrown around for everything. And Neil and myself, we used to kind of say, you know, like, we used to watch a lot of daft films like Superman 2, you know, with Terrence Stamp and, you know, really bad Arnold Schwarzenegger films, and just all sorts of different stuff, and Neil go, oh, that film's stupid, meaning it's daft. And then when I turned up and moved into the house with him, I had all these, you know, all these random records, just like, I mean, I'm just going to grab some random ones here, actually, that's not too bad, that one. But I used to kind of have all these records, and you go, where the hell are you getting these records from? They're really bent, you know. It's a very, especially a Nottingham word, and it does have negative connotations to it as well, but I think at the time we just thought, well, we're just kind of reusing the word in a way that we want to use, and yeah, you know, I guess it was 20 years ago when people maybe weren't necessarily sensitive to it, but there's, you know, no malice behind it at all, you know, yeah.
I was always curious about that, because some of my friends, one of them is bisexual, and he didn't take offence to Bent. He actually thought it was quite lovely music, and he was listening to I Remember Johnny, and then he heard A Girl Like You, and he was thinking himself, like Pet Shop Boys, and they're a famous group that are, you know, known in the gay club scene as well. So he was kind of curious about that. That was a question that was mainly for my mate, who I'm from Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's funny because when we first got together, I remember a few people used to think that Nell and I were, you know, lovers. And the first single we did was called "I Love My Man," you know. So yeah, there you go.
But, the Nottingham scene. Where do I begin with this one? Because not only Bent is the greatest band in this city, but also you got Sleaf and Mods, Jason Williamson.
Jason, yeah.
I'm sure you probably collaborated with him on some of his songs, or he worked with you guys.
We never did. I thought, well, Jay used to live with Nail for a while. A long time ago, but there was a time when he was coming in and doing some demos with us. It was actually when we were doing the second album, but it just never really transpired. I guess it was just one of those things where he came in and we had a lot of fun and we did some music together, but we never finished anything off, you know. And he's kind of gone off onto his tangent and done amazingly, really, with what he's doing. But I mean, to be honest, I mean, you've got Crazy P, I love Crazy P, such lovely people as well, and then. I mean, there's just so many people in Nottingham who've made music in Neon Heights, so I love them a lot as well. There's 6x7 Gang, and then there's, all the DIY stuff, all the house music. I mean, that's what Nail was doing before I met him, you know. So it was kind of nice at one point, especially in the early days of Bent, we used to walk into town, and it's a small city, you know, and everyone was just either a musician or an art student or a fashion student. It was really fun, you know. Yeah.
It's a great city. I haven't been to it many times. I haven't been to Nottingham many times myself. Last time it was a pass through. I was with my family. We were heading over to Scotland and we were seeing Sherwood Forest. And we were thinking, oh, Robin Hood. And because he's such a strong figure in British folklore and that sort of working class element, you know, take from the rich, give to the poor, it kind of explains where the Knott's sound comes from, especially from Mr. Jason Williamson, Andrew Fern.
Me and Nell are constantly sampling people and stealing samples from things, and so it's a funny thing actually. We were in New York once, myself and Nell, and there was a homeless guy sat in the corner. We ended up speaking to him for a bit, and he goes, "Hey, where are you from?" And we said, "Oh, Nottingham." We went, "Men in Tights, I love that movie."
No, that's what I tell all my friends who are from Canada or the US. They say, "Oh, Robin Hood, that's so great. You know, give to the rich, take to the poor, you know." With my bad American accent, but you know, somewhere has to start from somewhere. On the next question as well, with the artwork, you depicted a red cow. Which I think was quite hilarious in a way, because it reminded me if it was a celebration of British farming culture or the tranquility of the British countryside.
I mean, you'd think so with this hat that I'm wearing. You'd think I was, you know, big up the farming industry. Yeah, no, I mean, to be honest with you, there might be a very secretive hidden message with all those cows. I think some of it's because I live out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and I'm surrounded by farmers and cows anyway. That's quite funny. The cows were actually taken in England. The pictures were taken in England. it's quite funny because we had to do like some press shots, and one male was over, I said, "Right, we need to go and get a picture with some cows." And it was actually quite easy because only had to go about, you know, a kilometre down the road, and, you know, there's loads of them. But yeah, there's always sort of daft meanings and daft little things in the artwork. And I think sometimes we always start to forget ourselves because there's just so many daft things in there. And sometimes we just laugh at something. We just go, "That is just such a random thing to have as artwork," you know. There's some of the earlier stuff that was done. Rob White, who did all the very early stuff, like the EPs and Programme to Love and that. We had a wedding. Well, Programme to Love was meant to be a wedding banquet, you know, with our heads at the table, and it's like, I don't even know why we did that, but it was just a lot of fun again.
I miss the old artwork of the old albums, particularly Everlasting Blink with the
eye
that's stuck inside the pickle jar. I thought, oh, I'm not going to have pickled onions from a jar at the chippy again. But, you know, it's all great stuff. And the one with the flowers, Aerials, which my grandmother loves that artwork because it's almost like something you would put on the wall while you're having you know, your sip of Twinings.
Well, that's J.J. Burridge who did that artwork. He did everything sort of Everlasting Blink onwards, actually, yeah. With the exception of a couple of things on the Best Of and the Exercise stuff. But, yeah, he's responsible for all of that stuff, yeah.
Well, more power to him. In case if I ever, you know, make an EP or an album that sells on a particular label, I won't name which one, I'll definitely say, hey, I know Simon Mills. Can you help me out, please?
That's,
you know what? I think you have some of the best album covers this side of Boards of Canada, My Bloody Valentine and Funky Porcini. I don't know if that's an endorsement.
Well, Boards of Canada, I mean, wow, thank you, yeah. I love their artwork, all their imagery is so... I love the influences of it. I remember one night I was sat there watching the Andromeda Strain thinking, God, this really reminds me of Boards of Canada for some reason. And then I actually tweeted it and someone said, oh, well, you'll find that, you know, and then I started to realise, oh, my God, of course, that's where they were drawing all this stuff from, you know, it's just amazing. Such strong imagery. Brilliant.
I would agree with that there, especially with the faceless personas, especially on Music Has the Right, and some of the more sort of trippy kaleidoscope imagery of Gayo Gardi. It's the sort of thing that, you know, people would say, oh, you can, you know, roll a blunt, because in parts of the US you can smoke cannabis recreationally and have a token enjoy to the sounds. I don't get high off drugs. I actually get high off music, and Bent and some of the others are definitely what's the word? Culprits. But yes, on a more sort of technical matter, instrumentation for your music. Now, I know you talked about this a little bit earlier about the Korgs and the Moogs. But which one would you say is the best one out of them lot? The Nords, the Korgs, or the Moogs, or the Rolands? Because I saw on an earlier video, I think you'd done with another bloke. And you were talking about the Korg.
It depends what it's for, really. I think if I thought, what have I used the most? It's really difficult to say because, I mean, we've got, like, DX7s and stuff from the late 80s, mid-80s, early 80s. And it's like, you know, I'll go through a phase of never playing. I mean, like, the DX7 sat there for a long time and then suddenly it's being used all the time, you know, and then it will go back into a box for a while. But, I mean, the Moog, you know, that's been used on so much stuff. And it's been MIDI retrofitted as well. So that's really kind of cool. So I can trigger it off with the computer and that. I really don't know. But one of the newer synths that I got, which I think is brilliant, and a lot of people are just thinking they're overrated, is the DeepMind, which is, you know, I mean, we've had so many different classic synths over the years, all the EMS stuff, and we've had Elka Synthexes and PG Waves, and that is so versatile. It's quite a powerful synth for what it is, for the price. It's brilliant. But yeah, I couldn't put it down to one. I mean, I'll tell you what, I do love the SH09, which you probably can't see there.
I see it right there. It's the Roland.
Yeah, so the Roland SH101 is obviously they're popular. Everyone loves that. But the A9, I kind of prefer. It's kind of got more of a warm sound to it, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of more 70s sounding in some way, you know. But yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, there's a patch on there's a D50 as well, which is kind of almost, you know, there's a phase where no one would go near a D50 for years because it was just so bad. But now, you know, like the last 5 years, there's been so many records made because it's almost quite kitsch, you know. But there's a track, there's a pad on that called Soundtrack that, I mean, I think we bought the keyboard pretty much without sound, you know. Yeah, but yeah, it's difficult to say. And that's why I end up with so many keyboards, you see, because just one wouldn't be enough.
Hey, you know, the more the variety, the better. You know, because you've established yourself for quite a few years, so you deserve all those synthesizers in many ways. For me, you know, if I had the the Moolah and the options, I would definitely go with the Core, because I actually used to live not too far away from their headquarters. I think it was like in Bletchley or Milton Keynes. I didn't live too far away, and you know, nearby also had Marshall amplifiers as well, so I cut from musical cloth.
Yeah, well, this is it. If you're born near that, see, we love Korgs as well, actually, come to think of it. I mean, it's funny, isn't it, how things come around as well, like the Korg M1. We've laughed at for years as well. We used to go, God, can you remember when everybody had a Korg M1 and then it went out of fashion, and suddenly, I mean, probably about 10 years ago, all these house records start happening again. You know, it's funny how these things go around in circles, but yeah, a lot of their analog stuff. I mean, we've got a Korg vocoder over there, BC10, up on the, just there, yeah. I don't know if you can see.
I actually think I do. Was that the same one that you used to do that song? I'm trying to think of it. It sounds like Zapp and Roger. It was on.
I'm thinking that might be you're trying to do Cylons in Love there. I think
it was on Program to Love.
That was actually an EMS vocoder, which. I mean, they're just like hen's teeth now, those things are. We'd somehow acquired one from a friend and it didn't work, and we lived above some guy who somehow managed to get it to work for a while, which was mad. So, yeah, so we had that. But, yeah, we did use that Korg, though, yeah. Yeah.
I'm always interested in the music technology aspect of it, especially how you manipulate sounds and all that, especially vocal features, because growing up, I would watch a lot of a particular show that I was curious they might have played some of your music or not. Are you familiar with Jam? Chris Morris?
Yeah, love Chris Morris. God, yeah, he's amazing.
I know some of his, you know, people say, oh, his stuff is offensive or it's too dark, but Jam was definitely one of my favourite programmes because it plays that sort of ambient and trip-hop music in the background to sketches are quite bizarre, and I always thought should have played Ben on Jam.
It's weird because we heard that Chris Morris was into Ben at one point. I remember this years ago, and that was like I was so chuffed, you know, so happy about it because I'm just a massive fan of his stuff as well. I mean, I love obviously things, well, everything that he's done, really. I mean, even watching the IT Crowd do the night, you know, just love him, it's brilliant. And when he gets really out of order as well, to be honest, you know, the darker the humour kind of makes me laugh even more, to be honest. But yeah, he was very kind of outrageous though, wasn't he, really?
No, he worked. He'd done that one TV special on Barside that, I was too young to see at the time, but then I saw it years later, and I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm glad I saw this in a contained setting. The VPN, we're going to cut that conversation short, but I think his best work is Jam, as well as early episodes of Brass Eye. He definitely knows his stuff. I'd like to see him make an album. He's a great musician. He actually makes his own music.
Oh, really? I didn't actually know that, no. Oh, right, okay.
I think he collaborated with Amon Tobin or something on a song or two called Bad Sex. So, yeah. But,
that's
familiar. I will go on the next question as well. Your music video legacy. Because I know with Swollen Always, you definitely had quite a bit of a budget there. Also referencing the space landing of 69 with Neil Armstrong and then King Kong, which I always thought was very hilarious. But is it wrong to say to you lads that I used to get you guys confused with the Avalanches because there was a music video that they done, they're Australian, called Since I Left You, I Found a Woman Selling Her.
They came around the same time, weren't they? They were a similar era. No, not at all. I think it's a compliment. They just did great stuff. I've not actually caught up with them because they did some stuff recently, haven't they? But I've not caught up with what they've been doing at all.
They have only really done like one album after since I left you, and it was like Wildflower. Sort of came and gone.
They're very similar because obviously the sample type thing going on, and it's quite nostalgic and fluffy, and it's got the really pretty female vocal thing going on in it as well. So definitely, yeah.
That's why I used to get you a lot confused with Avalanches, but once I saw photos of you and you weren't a multi-group, because they had about like 7 or 8 people DJing and stuff, and they're from Australia, and you're from Notts. I thought, okay, that explains the little difference there, but just a little afterthought I told you. But I will say about Swollen or Always, whichever one you want to talk about, how did you get that music video made? Because I thought that was brilliant.
Well, they were, Oh, thank you. Well, it was when, because obviously we were on Ministry, they at the time said, well, we've got to get a video made. So it was just one of those things where they send out the music to all these different directors, and the directors would send the treatments in. We were reading like loads of different ones. And then the first one, well, I read one that just said, right, Simon and Nail go to the moon. And I was like, right, well, we're doing that one. And at the time, Nail was doing a lot of, Nail does a lot of impressions of people, and one of the ones that he used to do was Patrick Moore. And whenever I was on the train with him, he'd be going, I didn't go to bed just yet. And we were saying, oh, wouldn't it be great to get in touch with Patrick Moore and get him in the video? And in fact, the girl I was seeing at the time, she was her idea, because you should write to him. And, so we wrote to him. Yeah, and he decided to be in the video and everything. And he didn't actually want to be paid for it either. He refused to be paid. He just had a stroke as well. He was recovering from a stroke. He had no use of one arm when he did that video. And he actually said to me, he goes, he would have loved to have played the Glockenspiel on it, but he obviously couldn't do it at that time because of his health. But the fact that he refused to be paid was, ridiculous. But yeah, that was a lot of fun making those videos. Although the space suits we used to call the pain machines, because it was, it sounded like some thespian, but we're like in this spacesuit for 18 hours and they were crippling. They were so painful to wear. But I thought, right, I've had a lightsaber fight with Nail now on the moon. That's kind of, when the director said cut, I went, right, you can shoot me now. I'm done. I'm happy. That's the only thing I've put. Reenacting Star Wars.
It's the music video you're probably best known for, because I remember seeing that years ago on MTV Dance in the Mornings. That's how I actually found my foundation and love for this kind of music is MTV Dance Chilled Sessions. Oh. It's showing like Sundays at like 7 a.m. or something. I was having my muesli. Oh, those times, I'll never get them back again. And then next thing, they played that music video, then they played Avalanches, and then they played one of your collaborators, John Marsh from The Beloved, for Sweet Harmony. And I thought, oh, that video was a bit racy. It's got implied nudity. I thought, can you show that at 8 a.m. in the morning?
Probably the best time. I'm a massive fan of John's, as I say. He's just a legend, really. So talented. He's actually got me into things as well, like when we did Beautiful Otherness, one of the lyrics is Kind Hearts and Coronets, and I said to him, what is that? And he goes, it's actually an old Ealing film that he was referencing, and it's brilliant. It's got Alec Guinness in it, and he plays, maybe 10 or 15, he plays all the characters in this film. It's brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. As John said, talented for just weaving in these odd little references to things, just beautiful little things that he weaves into things. So yeah, I'd love to do some more with him, and we both would,
Well, tell Mr. Marsh I said hi. He's a great singer, and I'm definitely a fan of Happiness and Conscience, the two albums that, he's probably most known for. Please don't tell him I was talking about Sweet Harmony, because he's probably a little bit pissed off about that one, because everyone says, oh, they only just know us because of that music video, the nudity. Another one, because I know, you know, promotionals, I notice a lot of your music's on ads as well, especially like HM Revenue and Customs, they put one out and they put Thick Ear, and I was like, hey, I know that particular tune, like, if you don't pay your income taxes or something by April 1st, you could save a penalty. And then Top Gear, before Wild Herd Jeremy Clarkson kind of destroyed it, they put Private Road, my favourite Bent song.
Really, thank you. Yeah, it's, just, you know, on the Thick Ear thing, you know, it's quite funny because at the time, I owed about, you know, $4,000 or something to the Inland Revenue. I just haven't got around to paying it. And, you know, he's got bright blue hair. And one day there was a knock on the door, and it was the Inland Revenue. He said, hello, Mr. Mills. Yeah, but just to let you know that you're, you know, there's an outstanding amount here of £4,000 that you need to pay us. Well, we've actually given you some music in an advert. I make music for a living, and we've licensed some music to the Inland Revenue, but they haven't paid the label yet. So, but as soon as the label gets paid by you, that means I can then pay you the tax. And he looked at me as if I was, and I said, oh, if you don't believe me, I'll go upstairs and I'll go and get the, because I got the album, you know, I was going to play it to him and say, look, it's on the advert, but it just hasn't been paid yet. And he goes, no, that's actually a very good excuse. No, I believe you. He was just wondering what the hell he, it's one of the most random excuses to not paying tax ever, but it was completely true. They hadn't paid me at the time, so I couldn't pay them the tax bill until they paid me, and then I paid it.
If I knew about that, I probably wouldn't have asked that question. That sounds quite a sensitive financial matter.
No, I'm glad. I mean, I thought it was quite funny that he was coming around giving me a Thick Ear, and we'd given them a Thick Ear, you know, so there you go.
Sorry, I had to do that song. It's a nice little jingle.
I wondered what you were doing.
It's a Thick Ear that I'm doing. It's sort of like a, you know, little whistle. As far as everything with your labels that you've been in, because I know right now you're on Godlike, and then you also release stuff on Bandcamp. But out of all the labels you've been on, what would you say is your favourite?
I don't know. I mean, Godlike's a nice one to work on because it's run by Nick Hansen, who's been managing us since 98. And he's a mate of ours, you know, but he manages us, and it's just like we just go and do what we want to do, and he looks after the whole thing, you know. That's kind of like the premise of Ministry. They basically, because we were like the first bands to be on Ministry, and they said to us, well, just make whatever you want, do whatever artwork you want to make, whatever videos you want. I mean, that's just an absolute dream situation, really. But I guess it was just difficult at the time because we were new. We were almost like guinea pigs in a way for that label. But, you know, it did well. And, yeah, but I mean, I love Bandcamp as well. I love releasing stuff directly, you know, because I love making the artwork. I love doing everything, you know. So it's quite rewarding to do that. And also, you know, so especially now with the COVID thing, I mean, the thing was we were doing all this stuff so that we can go and tour again. I mean, that's what's going to happen with the Bent thing. Whether it happens to be digital for a while and we have to stream, I don't know. But, and, you know, Bandcamp has just been so amazing for supporting musicians, you know, because Spotify pay, I think it was, it less than a peanut for each stream, you know. It's crazy, you know. And Apple take 30% of each sale, you know. I mean, I can totally understand. I mean, Spotify is great for just having convenience and being able to switch something on and listen to it. And I completely get that. And I think it's good to put your music there as well. But then sometimes when you want to just release something and have something out, you know, we said last month, let's come out with a quick surprise. Let's do like an exercise EP that, you know, we hadn't even really announced. We're just going to do it out of the blue. And it was kind of fun to do, you know. But it's, you know, it's nice to have things on different platforms, really. But yeah, I think Godlike, Nick's been great with it, really, and he's the one that kind of got us, enabled us to get this stuff back on the road again, you know, because it's, well, you know, it's an expensive thing to make music because you've got to live while you do it, and it takes months and months to write the music sometimes, you know. So yeah,
Oh no, I totally understand that. Everyone has their reasons for why things are the way they are. I know I was asking another musician. Well, I'll probably give it away. It's James Brattle, Funky Porcini, and I was asking why he's not on Ninja Tune anymore. But hopefully I will be hearing by next week. But I've been hearing Ninja Tune and even Warp, two of my favorite labels, have been cutting some of their lineup because they're not doing enough in sales or vinyl and streaming. So, I understand, but it does mean, I have certain suspicions. Like, they keep on the top talent. So if they keep Chemical Brothers, they'll get rid of Add Enter the X and Broadcast. They keep Nine Inch Nails, but they'll get rid of In Me or Enter Shikari. Enter Shikari is actually a band I actually know quite well.
Excellent. No, it's one of those. I mean, it's one of the things when you get on a large label. Anyway, we were on EMI for years, and then I think they spent a lot of money on a Robbie Williams album, and they had to cut loads of jobs. I think it was one year they spent millions and millions on Mariah Carey and Robbie Williams, and then all of these smaller bands disappeared. Some of the people that we knew that worked there disappeared. It was like, they put all their eggs in this one basket. It's funny, really. But yeah, I mean, it's funny times at the moment as well, because obviously there's so many people I know that can't go and perform, so they're having to find new ways to do things. But I think it's kind of, it's really testing people, especially with the streaming and that kind of thing, which is something I've been meaning to do for so long. But my internet connection here, where I am, has been so bad. I only upgraded it just before Christmas, so I couldn't do some streaming. I wouldn't have been able to have done this interview before because it was so slow. But this
Well, you're doing a lot better than I am. I actually don't have the internet at home for one or two reasons. One, my local access provider won't install broadband in the area as efficiently. And number two, I have a bit of an addiction to internet and logging in, so I often like to do stuff before I head over to work or in the car, so that way it sort of curbs my addiction. Some people, musicians, they like to, snort coke and drink themselves to death. But me, not so much. Because there's so much to explore, music and films, it's never ending. I just even saw just yesterday Coming to America and Judas and the Black Messiah after I left work, because I also do film reviews as well, so I'm always busy on every sort of step that I can. I even saw some of the exercise videos that you published on your Instagram, including that one where you've got an Apple phone emoji look like a lion, and I was like, that would have creeped me out 10 years ago, but now it doesn't.
Oh, hang on a minute. I think that is Lord Charles. There's a puppet called Lord Charles from the 1970s and early 1980s. It was like a ventriloquist puppet, nailing myself and Nick, the manager Nick. He was always laughing at stuff like that. We were always laughing at puppets and Sesame Street and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, let's put some of that in the video.
Hey, whatever works there, I'm also a fan of puppetry myself. One of the first albums I think my mother bought, I never really listened to it that much, was Moloko's Things to Make and Do. And I mostly just liked the album as a child because it had some puppets and cartoonish toy characters on the logo. And then next to it, you had Prodigy's Music for the Jilted Generation. Rest in peace, Keith Flint, in case if he's hearing this in heaven. And that album cover scared me when I was a little nit. Now it doesn't anymore. I don't know, just want to tell you because you're a music guy, so.
When you're saying about, hang on, yeah, when I was a kid, my dad always used to play this to me, The War of the Worlds, and I just used to be terrified of it, absolutely terrified, scared the
Oh,
life out of
Orson
it.
Welles.
Well, this isn't the recording of the radio, that's just an album, but the artwork just used to freak me out, yeah.
Oh no, I never really heard that one about War of the Worlds. I know they said about News of the World. There was like this episode of a adult cartoon called Family Guy, and the baby with the British accent, Stewie, he's like all scared of Queen's News of the World album. He's like, do you want to look at this, Stewie? Are you serious? And I thought that was hilarious because I could relate to that to some degree with Aphex Twin's Richard D. James album, Prodigy's Music for the Jilted Generation, and oh no, for some reason that FC Kahuna music video hailing with the barefoot girl on the piano being spied on creeped me out for some reason.
I've not seen that. Visage Fade to Grey, the video that used to scare the life out of me when I was a kid. It was like clown's faces and masks spinning around. And when you're 5 years old, you're taking everything as a given, you know.
Oh, no, of course. It's very weird. Even things that are like 18 certificate, but like U or PG can sometimes freak you out when you're young. Yeah. It's very strange. Very strange indeed. My father was scared by Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and I was like, that's a U. But I'm getting a little bit off tangent here. My apologies, though. So I will say, because I know you've been on EMI and Ministry, who do a lot of the compilations. Again. That's how I knew them for. But out of Ninja Tune, Warp, 4AD, Pork Recordings, and Mute, which would you say is your favourite out of the bunch?
Oh, jeez. That's really difficult, because obviously... I mean, I think I'd have to say Warp, because... I mean, there's been times, actually, where I wasn't necessarily into Warp. There's been times where I thought they kind of went a little bit too experimental and it didn't resonate with me. But then they'd suddenly come back with something amazing, and then I'd go, you know. Again, they kind of seem to be ahead of the curve a lot anyway. So, I don't know. I'd say Warp. They're brilliant on it, really. I mean, I love so many different artists off that label. And, yeah.
I would agree with that, too. You probably would have been a good fit on that label, but yeah, I do get with the experimental stuff, like Orteca, for instance.
Well, I think with Neil and I aren't necessarily avant-garde. We're not kind of trying to do something that's futuristic and thinking out ahead of the game, like a lot of those artists, like, you know, Orteca, all those kind of artists that are just really bonkers, you know, and they really do think ahead of the curve. They're reinventing the wheel each time, where Neil and myself, we just kind of go into our own little universe, and I guess we don't try and be futuristic or anything. We just, a lot of it's actually nostalgic rather than futuristic, you know, because we're kind of digging into the past rather than sort of trying to be the future. So maybe that's it.
Oh, no, I would agree with you there. Sometimes, yeah, I do the same thing, too. I've sampled Joy Division, Redskins, I think The Smiths on one particular song altogether as a sound collage, Public Enemy style, and I put it to some sort of Audio Bullies Streets type of sounding beat, and I called it Nostalgia Rules, more like Nostalgia Makes You a Fool, and I'd done some spoken word on it. And I didn't publish it yet because I don't know if I might violate copyright or licensing issues. But if you like, on your free time, I'll send you a link to it. It's a hilarious little tune about my life. But yes, I will get back onto more bent stuff in this moment with the exercise and take songs for this instance. Are they mainly used for test purposes or to build a sound collage to your listeners? Because in many ways, the songs reminded me a little bit of what... You remember Enigma?
Oh, Enigma, yeah.
Curly MC used to put those little pan pipes in the very beginning of each and every one of his albums, so it was like a test or an intro of sorts. That's what it reminded me of. Were those the purposes of the exercise songs or take?
I don't know. I think the purposes of exercises for us is that we just try to just have as much fun as possible. And like, whenever I hear pan pipes, they kind of make me laugh a little bit, you know. Do you know what I mean? They just got that thing about them. That, I mean, to be honest, when I was a kid, there used to be a band called Incantation back in the 80s. And my dad used to play it all the time. I used to kind of like it because it had like a floaty ethereal thing. But no, it's not not like that, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's all these silly little references, and people go, are they kind of referencing, you know, Enya or Clannad? And, you know, it's like even stuff that maybe frowned upon or whatever, but yeah, no, it's. Yeah, you see that? I like the idea of sticking pan pipes in because it's just, you know, yeah, a bit daft. And I'm like, yeah.
Hey, I like that mixture of sound collages and effects all together. I think it makes it both maddening and beautiful at the same time. I definitely got that, especially from A Ribbon in My Hair, where you sample an old Nana song and you put some sort of African rhythm at the end and then put the string quartet in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he heard me say.
Sometimes we're kind of, you know, more juvenile when we're making stuff, I guess. And other times, you know, we kind of end up making something that's maybe possibly more, hopefully, thought-provoking or something like that. I mean, when I do my own stuff, I'm not necessarily having fun with Nail because I'm working by myself, so you don't tend to frank about as much. But I'll still slip silly things into my own music, but it tends to be less kind of juvenile, I guess is the best way of putting it. But yeah, there's still things that I mean, I love making music where I just think, that's really daft. And I'm happy with it. It's really daft, you know. So yeah, I mean, like when we did, you know, there's been loads of different times. Well, most of the music I've ever done, I've said that, to be honest. But yeah, so there you go.
Hey, whatever works though, I suppose. It almost sounds like from the way you sample, you say daft, you're probably even dafter than Daft Punk, who I know just recently disbanded for some odd reason, but, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's mad really about, but they've been around for such a long time as well, haven't they, you know?
They have,
yeah. Yeah, they weren't that daft, were they?
No, not really. They were actually quite smart and successful. And I mean daft in a sort of like bonkers sort of way in terms of music. But yeah, I'm actually, I hope they don't hear this over in France, but I'm glad they disbanded. I didn't like Random Access Memories because it came out the same year as Boards of Canada's Tomorrow's Harvest and My Bloody Valentine's Comeback, and there was an album that sounded kind of bentish called Public Service Broadcasting's Inform, Educate and Entertain that I thought, wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think Nail mentioned that before, you know. Yeah, I think with the Daft Punk thing, I preferred, I mean, this is such a hipster thing to say, isn't it? You know, I prefer the old stuff. I mean, I'm sure that's what people say about Pence. I do. But, you know, it's like, yeah, it's just one of those, I guess. I mean, I obviously love all the sort of disco-y stuff. I mean, all the French disco-y stuff I loved anyway, you know. I mean, that was actually massive, just as me and Noel were sort of getting together, really, you know.
Because I think Program to Love came out the same year as Discovery. Unfortunately, you know, your album wasn't quite as well known as Discovery because it had the Japanese animation, it had the music videos and the top billing songs on the top 10. So I was like, I wish I heard of it a lot earlier.
Because I remember seeing this, well, I've got Discovery now, so I remember buying it thinking, is it going to be better than ELO Discovery? Because I love ELO, you see. And I was thinking, well, you got two bands that are using spectral colours and, you know, futuristic imagery. Hold that album.
ELO is one of Britain's best kept secrets. I personally think that they're a much better group than the Beatles. I know a lot of people from the Merseyside and Liverpoolians would kick me ass for saying that, but I'm not ashamed.
I'm with you on that, to be honest, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Blimey. Be glad you're in, wherever you are, Northern Ireland. Are you in Belfast or Derry?
Well, I wasn't too far from Derry. Actually, I was living over the border in the Gulf for about 5 years, but I live on the coast of Antrim now. So it's just like the northeast coast. It's where they film Game of Thrones and all that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay.
So it's very, very sort of different to the centre of Nottingham, yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine. A lot of cows in the countryside. Do you get to see Kit Harington and Amelia Clarke?
No, no. Who are they?
The Game of Thrones actors.
You see, I've never watched it. I mean, everyone says to me, oh, you should watch it. You know, it's got, you know, it's amazing. But I haven't got around to it because I'm still watching, I've started watching Tales of the Unexpected again. And Columbo, I'm doing Columbo, the box set of Columbo for the fourth time in the last 2 years. So I'm basically living in the past. That's what I mean. I'm just basically living in the, you know, 70s and 80s.
My mother's the same way. She still watches old episodes of Perry Mason, Matlock, Flintstones. I watch Brass Eye and Alan Partridge and, hell, even In Between Us. And In Between Us came out about 10 or so years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favourite movies is Toy Story, which is a, you know, an anime. It's for children, but I really don't care.
No, I love Monsters, Inc. for me is my... I just love Monsters, Inc. Love it. Yeah. But, yeah, I love Toy Story.
Hey, it's a great film. And, you know, Randy Newman, he's a great musician. You should sample him next time you get a chance, but you might go penniless because of the royalties and licensing. But So I will say on another end, so we talked about the exercise ones, and what was your favourite album or song growing up? When I before came to the electronic and ambient stuff, I was a more of alternative and metal person. One of my favourite songs growing up was Faith No More's Epic. You want it all, but you can't have it.
I used to listen to The Real Thing quite a lot growing up. If I'm a girlfriend, when we first met, I was like, what are you into? And she's like, you know, into things like Weird Science, Adam and the Ants, Faith No More, you know. It's like, wow, okay. Kate Bush, all this kind of stuff. Growing up wise, I think, it's a difficult one. Because obviously there's loads of different phases, but I remember being a kid. I think the first time I ever got blown away by the production of a record was Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome, because Trevor Horn just made that album just sound so huge. I think it was like one of the first albums to be multi-track digitally as well, I think. But I mean, the production in it, it's just all these atmospheric things going on in it. And I remember just thinking, just loved the production of that record. When I was a kid, because it was almost like a journey, you know. But then I loved a lot of Pet Shop Boys stuff when I was growing up, and yeah, again, it's like, I mean, I both Nail and myself loved a lot of hip hop as well. It's really difficult to put our fingers on, you know, loved Depeche Mode, and when I grew up, I loved Adam and the Ants as well, because they was just so different to everything else that had ever happened, you know. And they still are, you know, there's no one's
Prince
ever done
Charming,
that.
Prince Charming. My father mother grew up on the same stuff as you lot.
Exactly. I don't have really, I don't know, there wasn't anything that I think was anything strange or that anything nobody else had ever heard of, you know. It's quite, yeah.
Hey, you know, I like a lot of the same stuff as you guys as well. Because I used to listen to a lot of 80s new wave and 70s post-punk sort of stuff in the car. And my father and my mother used to play it on the tapes. And I hold those tapes quite dearly to the point that, you know, I done a song called Nostalgia Rules. I featured Joy Division's Love Will Tear Us Apart Again. And the Smiths' There Is a Light That Never Goes Out. Or was it How Soon Is Now? I can't remember. It was a few years ago. But I hold the same sort of songs as you did quite hardly, and Kate Bush. What a gorgeous looking woman. And from the same areas where my father and my grandparents grew up.
Oh, really?
Kent.
Kate Bush for me is my favourite female artist. I can actually pinpoint it every single time someone asks me. If someone says to me, what's your favourite band or who's your favourite male artist, I kind of... But for some reason, Kate Bush has just taken over my life. I've always loved her since I was a kid. And she's always been, again, you know, I think the people that she worked with had such a great influence on her. You know, she just ended up just so ahead of the curve again, you know, like working with like sampling and stuff like that. And yeah, love her.
Well, she was definitely ahead of her time. I think she even worked with Brian Eno as well. And we all know Brian Eno is the king of electronic music and electronic music producing. We won't even go there because that's another topic in of itself. But my favourite female artist is Björk. And maybe in a runner-up, you got Belinda Butcher from My Bloody Valentine and Mickey Bereny from Lush and Kelly Ali from Sneaker Pimps. That was a short-lived band that was kind of came out around the same time as you, but yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because, I mean, there's Wendy Carlos. I don't know. I mean, the disco's on, really. But I think, for me, at Björk, I mean, the debut is one of my favourite ever albums as well. You know, it's just so beautifully made as well. So very similar taste.
So, yeah, I miss debut as well. But I think her best work is Post. I remember I saw that music video for It's So, So Quiet. And, you know, I was a young man, and, you know, you don't get hormones until you're, like, in your teens, but, I started, like, I wish I could marry her when I was watching Björk on the music video. I was like, and my parents were teasing me, even to this very day, about, you love Björk, don't you? You want to marry her after seeing It's So, So Quiet, but, that's getting into more personal matters. But, So thankfully, you can hold yourself because we only have two more questions left, and the first one before the last will be encounters with other musicians. I don't know if you've met any, you know, big names, but I will say, did you meet people like the Chemical Brothers or Air, Luke Vibert, Richard D. James? Anthony X, Broadcast, Groove Armada, Amon Tobin?
Well, yeah, the first time I ever DJed was with Groove Armada, and Nail, because Nail could DJ and I couldn't. And I never even wanted to be a DJ, but then when we signed to Ministry, they were like, right, you've got to go and do this, you've got to go. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know. And I was absolutely, you know, I was nervous, to say the least, and it's the best way of putting it. And yeah, they were really, really lovely guys, actually. And, it was in a Levi's store on Oxford Street, and yeah, it was mad. There was like this whole music event with DJs under the floor, so that was one of the first times ever DJ was with them. And yeah, we supported Chemicals as well, and Orbital, they're all lovely people, really. In fact, my Blue SH-101 is signed by Orbital on the underneath of it. It says even a bent clock tells the right time twice a day.
Oh, that's awesome, because they definitely know how to work their magic with the twiddly knobs. Paul and Phil Hartnell.
Yeah, legends. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, they signed it with an ultraviolet pen, and I don't have a light, otherwise I'd be showing it off now, you know. But, you know, trying to think who else. I was just trying to think. It was like Fatboy Slim and Carl Cox, we did a gig with. Oh, there's lots of people. Tom Middleton did quite a lot with. And I'm just trying to think. I'm just going back in time now. Yeah, but.
Well, did you ever meet also Funky Porcini as well?
I never met Funky Porcini, no. I don't think I have.
But you said you met Cold Cut, Jonathan Black and. Jonathan Moore and Matt Black. They're two great guys as well. From what I hear.
Yeah. I think we bumped into them at a big chill festival years ago. And, but there's one time it's quite funny actually, we did a gig with Carl Cox and Dave Seaman, DJing out in Ibiza. And before we went out to do the gig, you know, we were sort of in this back room having a couple of drinks, and Carl said to me, he goes, are you looking forward to tonight then? And I said, well, I'm not sure. It's a bit of a strange lineup, and he goes, why? And I said, because it's Ben Cox and Seaman. because he laughed his head off too. Yeah, there you go.
Oh!
Yeah.
Because it sounds like something sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see why some people would be like, you what, you cheeky little bastard.
This is a funny pace of cocks and semen, but there you go, you know. That's the update I'll be telling my grandchildren, you know. What did you see when you grew up? Yeah, but yeah. But no, on a serious note, yeah. Yeah, I think I've been lucky, really, to just find out how many people are just such lovely people as well, you know. Just, yeah. You hear a lot when you're sort of starting out making music that there's a lot of bad reputations in music, and, you know, I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of people in the industry that are a bit dodgy or whatever, but most people I think we've met have just been absolutely amazing. I mean, met Luke Viber, he's lovely as well. BJ Cole, who we work with quite a lot. We actually got to work with BJ because of the work that he did with Luke Viber. Such an amazing pedal steel guitarist, you know. But yeah, just all lovely, lovely people.
I wish I was there to even see you guys do your magic and work with all these collaborators, because, you know, I hold a lot of these artists that I've just mentioned, you included, to a high regard. And unfortunately, you know, at that time, I would have been too young to see anyone really, or let alone get into clubs back in 99 and 2000. But if they ever do build a time travel machine, I would certainly be in the front lines and see you guys perform and visit places like God's Kitchen and Blue Note and a few others.
I mean, if I had a time machine, I'd go back to when I just told you the anecdote about Ben Cox. I seem to see your face again.
Like,
okay. This, moving along.
This anyway, following event has been passed 15 certificate for strong sex references. I'm a bit of a film censorship nerd, so you probably heard me insert a few references to British film censors.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We'll have to. But it's COX, anyway. It's spelled COX, so it's fine.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's not related to, like a cockerel. Or rooster, sometimes they call it. But this will be the last question, and then you can go have your pee or have your, like they say, you're probably going to have dinner soon.
Looking fidgety.
I know, there. Something Sanctified. I know it's been one of your sub-projects that you've been doing outside of Bent, and how did it come about? Because it's very interesting, release it through Bandcamp, because it reminds me of Bent's more groovier cousin. Did you do Something Sanctified as a means of breaking away with the record labels, or just doing it just for fun?
It was a kind of love project, really. I mean, it still is, because I'm doing some more at the moment, but what it was is when I lived in Donegal, I got asked to work. Well, Joel Hood was doing some stuff on International Feel, and he was putting an EP out, and he asked me to produce it. So I got to know Joel. He came over and stayed with me for a week, and I kind of was mixing his album. And every night, you know, we'd be sat there drinking wine and listening to all these DJs and all the house and disco stuff that we loved. And then, you know, we just kind of kept on hooking up and making more music together. And I ended up saying, look, you know, you should collaborate. I'd love to do some stuff where, you know, you're on some of my solo work. So he was on my Harmonic Jigsaws album. And as we were doing that, it was just every time I see Joel, we can't help but listen to sort of lots of house and disco, you know. So we were saying, like, you know, it's just so nice making that stuff as well, where we're not necessarily writing songs and doing vocals. And you know, I love DJing as well, you know. I mean, it's funny how I started in the music thing by hating DJing and never wanting to be a DJ. I used to think DJs were just people who played everybody else's records, because I was so arrogantly wanting to be a producer, you know, as a 17-year-old. And then you get older and you get put in a room with 500 people and you think, actually, this is quite difficult, you know, and it's not an easy thing to do at all. And it's an amazing, it's just such a rewarding, lovely thing to, you know, DJing I just love. So, yeah, so a lot of that is just, we basically said, Something Sanctified is just everything that we would play out, what the kind of music, we're kind of making the kind of music that we'd listen to, but we're kind of DJing the kind of music that we would make, if that makes sense. So it all kind of comes from the same universe, which I guess tends to be a sort of atmospheric, soulful, house and sometimes slightly disco-y, but, and it's got the bend thing in there, because obviously, you know, I'm in there making the chords and, you know, there's melodies and things, but it's often the same instrument as well, you know. You're going to hear the same bass coming from certain synths and stuff like that will be in a bent record, but then it'll be in a something sanctified record as well, yeah. Yeah, so we're just getting some more stuff done, actually, because we did a record last year on Need One early on in the year, and then the COVID thing just happened, and it was a bit of a nightmare, because we were sort of so excited about getting out of DJing, you know, and then so then I kind of went straight into doing locational, and then just went straight into ambient mode.
Hey, keep on with the good work with Something Sanctified, because you definitely got something up on your hands right there. Even with all the political and social upheaval that is occurring at this time, I'm actually very, very glad to have you on board, Mr. Simon Mills.
Working families, you are definitely an excellent interviewee. Tax credits are being replaced by new tax credits, so more people get more money. If you currently get tax credits, you'll be sent one new form automatically, but you need to fill it in now to continue claiming. And you can even apply online. Because if you're working or bringing up children, you're contributing to the UK. And if you've earned it, make sure you claim it. Because it's money with your name on it.